This is Cave Scott Allen of otico.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from lazycoder.com.
Hello, we are at NDC Oslo. I'm talking to John McCoy. I talked to you, I think, 2 years ago at NDC Oslo, and we had talked about .NET security and some stuff.
Yeah.
What have you been up to? What did you talk about this year?
I'm still moving .NET security forward, and this year we did a hands-on attack class, and then the talks were on defensive patterns for enterprise structures, so how to build a defensible service and enterprise and have defendable layers and build a responsive security structure.
Well, first of all, can you scare us a bit with, like, what kind of things did you show about insecurity and how...
Oh, sure. We do reverse engineering where we make a executable on disk or a DLL on disk editable, and the same thing in memory. And we're able to edit the IL, but now we're able to edit the assembly code underneath the JITted .NET application at runtime. So we're able to go under all of the security of .NET, edit it in fundamental ways, such as if you're allowing your application to use an entity framework to talk to a SQL database, then we are able to inject into the application, bypass the entity framework, and attack the database directly. So in that case, back to the enterprise defensible architecture, you need to build a service that it talks to. Instead of talking to the database, it goes to a REST service, and you build login and detection and stop us there. And then it's basically, if we should take over your web server, how do you stop us from moving through your enterprise?
Hmm.
And it was a fun talk.
That's often a common thing I hear about, like any big hack. It's like, well, first they got into the website, and then they got to the database, and then they, through that, same passwords were used or that kind of thing.
Yeah, commonly we'll find people that will even put their authentication server or their database on the same web server. And so once you take the web server, you have immediate access. Or you want to have a firewall between yourself and the database. So if we used an unpatched exploit between your web server and your database, the firewall prevents us going through that. Instead, you keep it to a single port on a single service, and it's highly defendable. And architectural security unit tests, security user stories, and we're really trying to push a new paradigm of security in .NET.
And some of these things are common patterns. What are some of the very specific .NET things? Like, what's different for a .NET developer?
A lot of our patterns, we are trying to push towards a generic implementation, but some of the uniqueness is what are easy choices in .NET. So like building a REST service might not be easy if you're a C++ coder, but it's incredibly easy. So we're leaning towards solutions that fit an easy paradigm for .NET coders to show that security doesn't need to be hard, that it can essentially cost you the same amount of time. You have to talk to your database anyways. Simply, if you add this and this, a REST service, and you, in your UML, define a firewall with a single port, that this couple of extra hours can mean a lot of security, whereas if you were to retrofit it later, you could be talking tens of thousands of man hours.
Okay.
So
in your talk about securing, did you kind of step through some of those, like securing a specific
occurrence?
Okay.
Yeah. And that was part of it. We walked through unit tests and user stories. One of the security stories we talked about was you have medical records on the edge of your network. A client has entered a medical record and you want to send this through your enterprise and protect it. You encrypt it on the most edge node. So as it traverses through your web server, should someone have taken over your web server, the traffic is encrypted on the edge node and the web server does not have the decryption key. It moves to your database. And even at that point, maybe you store it in a document retention database like Mongo, and it still doesn't become decrypted. So if someone takes over your database, it doesn't have the decryption keys.
Hmm.
And then you stand up a key server that's on a segmented secured network, and the user can log into that and retrieve keys, and then the and then it goes on from there, whether you're doing public and private key signing and all that. Mm-hmm. And someone retrieves the record and it comes encrypted out of the database, encrypted to the web server. And it, of course, it's in SSL, so it has transport on top of the actual encryption. It goes to the edge node, and at that point, it becomes decrypted. So you can say at no point could one of our sysadmins have gotten a hold of the record, because at no point did they have the keys.
Right.
And it's if someone had compromised XYZ systems, it was still protected.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that it could be a sysadmin that's a weak point. And I think a lot of time people are assuming it's only someone outside their network getting in.
But
I mean, a lot of time that's kind of a naive.
Oh, I mean, I would actually consider the attacker to have more power than your sysadmin.
Oh.
So if your sysadmin can do it, the attacker can more than do it. Typically, we call it above admin because we're taking over not only your AD infrastructure, we're taking over the passwords on your routers, and we're dropping in new firmware. And your sysadmins cannot eject us out. We're above admin.
Wow. Okay.
And so you should consider the attacker to have more ability than your sysadmin.
Okay. So did you see James's talk last night? When he did that.
Oh, it was good.
Yeah. So he was kind of like, you're not going to keep up. Like, it's basically almost impossible. Of course, some of that's a joke, right?
Yeah. It's,
but is it actually, like when you're saying, I've got attackers that are smarter than my sysad, or have more
power
right?
Yeah.
Wow. It's a little scary, right?
Well, yes. And that's part of the planning for it, where you plan that you're going to have a patching window on your web server.
Mm-hmm.
You have to accept connections of all sorts. And in that patching window, I can take over your web server. Can you, A, detect me? The most important. Because if you can't detect me, I have unlimited time.
Right.
And I'll eventually win. So you do detect me. Maybe it takes you a day or an hour or a minute. And I have that window. If I do have that window of time and I have direct access to your SQL database, then I can find an unpatched vulnerability or SQL injection or something to pivot into your database in a matter of seconds.
Mm-hmm.
If I've done reconnaissance, then I know you're using SQL Server 2005, and I can have a whole slew of exploits ready to fire. So if I have just 1 minute, I can move from your server to your database, and you reject me from your server, but I'm already in your database. If you put a firewall between your web server and your database, now I'm talking about, okay, I can't attack... When I can't attack the server or the system the database is on, I'm confined to attacking over SQL. I still have some choices. Okay. If you confine that to a REST service, then I can attack your REST service. But again, it's a level harder.
Mm-hmm.
REST can be defended while a database is not meant to be defended. And then in your REST service, you put login and detection. So when I attack your database, that actually becomes when you find out that I've attacked your web server.
Okay.
So when I penetrate your web server, I fire off automatic attacks to pivot into the database. And within milliseconds, you're detecting me intruding in your web server. And the database says, hey, I'm seeing attacks from the web server. And you take down the web server.
Okay.
So maybe you even put your web server into an S3 Amazon bucket and use CloudFront to deliver static content. And it's an HTML5 page. And when the user enters content, it goes back up to another REST server somewhere else, and you have scalable REST servers. So your web server going from a complex processing engine has come down to a static web page delivery, HTML5 going to REST services, and building security around a REST service, incredibly easy. Building security around a web server, incredibly hard.
Hmm.
Look at the number of patches that come out.
Yeah.
How many patches come out for Nginx a year versus IIS?
Right.
And you have a patch window, and it's really scary where people will take the patches, reverse engineer them within 24 hours, and be using those as payloads.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there's a patch out, you have 24 hours before the bad guys have identified that patch, understood it, reversed it, and are using it.
What about mobile applications? Because I'm just thinking now, especially with like services and stuff,
mm-hmm.
I've read about people looking at mobile apps and seeing they're directly plain text sending passwords and all kinds of crazy stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
So do you end up working with those much or?
Oh, yeah. And, we have patterns for, I mean, it's well documented to using tokens and how to handle these different things. The primary leaders I would say to emulate are Twitter and Amazon.
Hmm.
Look at how they're doing their authentication, how they're doing their crypto, how they're doing their signing, and they have well-published, although it takes some work, but they have well-published APIs for how they're doing their crypto and their signing, and they've done an excellent job.
Okay. Wow. Are there some general, like, these you know, vulnerabilities come out, and then you were talking about some, like, smart things I can do on my network and stuff, so that assuming one thing's compromised, things aren't going to be all attacked all over
each
my
system
network.
Should defend itself from each other system.
Okay. And so that if I'm writing desktop applications, I guess I need to do the same kind of thing, right? Like not assume the different components are all trusted.
And have a response plan for should the desktop become compromised, how do we defend the web server? If the web server becomes compromised, how do we defend the database? If the database becomes compromised, how do we defend our outgoing APIs and so on? And have a plan to take them down. And just as a thought exercise, assume you lost your database. It's out there. What do you wish you would have done? Assume you lost your web server. What do you wish you would have done? How do you wish your architecture would have been different now that they control your web server? All your users are flowing through there, and they can attack all of your users' traffic. They can inject malware going back. They can ride their traffic going in. You wish you would have encrypted it. And now it's encrypted between the user and the backend service, not the user and the server, which you still should use SSL and transport protocol between the user and the server. But it'd be nice if that traffic flowing through there was encrypted. So once they take over the web server, they don't get your users, because now they can push malware to all your users.
Right.
And so as a thought exercise, what do you wish you would have done if they took it over?
Yeah. Yeah, I can see getting my dev team together in a room and saying, let's pretend like...
Yeah, and it's really fun. Make it fun. If you have multiple dev teams, have dev team A attack the service of dev team B. And if they find a hole, a pizza party.
Wow.
Make it fun. And security should be not harder. If you're doing it and it's harder, you're probably doing it wrong. Just like .NET. If it's four lines of code and it's perfect and it's flowing and it's performant, you did it right. If it's hard and you're slogging uphill and it's not performant, you did it wrong. Hmm. And security is the same way. It should be fun and easy.
Oh, cool.
So hire us, because we'll help you make it fun and easy. We do training and all that.
Awesome. Okay. So one other thing you showed me earlier, this 3D operating system you've been working on.
Yeah. We're working on Wave 3D.
Okay.
And it's a cross-platform front end to every operating system, Linux, Mac, and Windows, iPhone, and Android, mobile. And it gives the same exact experience. So you can open a movie, a document, a picture inside of your environment, desktop or mobile. You can connect it to, we're going to support Amazon, Google, and Dropbox. And now you can open your documents from the cloud on all of your devices and have a ubiquitous interface across all machines. And now you can have the same front end on your Steam machine at home, and you can open your documents, and it's really fun.
Wow. So, and it's 3D. What are you using for the kind of graphics?
We're definitely .NET.
Okay.
And it's running on top of the Mono framework on top of Unity.
Wow.
And it's an excellent platform, and we're getting performant data loading out of it. And we're looking at loading the file system and the computer, the web file storage. So if you want to look at your entire web server, you can see all of your files at once. And we're pretty close, if not better, than how it was in the movies with being able to cruise through your web server. And it's coming out. We're looking at doing it as a Kickstarter for $20. And we're looking at targeting the average user market. Now you can install Linux and have a friendly front end that's immediately usable. And it doesn't have any installs. So you can put it on a USB stick, plug it in. And now in your 3D environment, you have a web browser, a document editor, a movie player, everything you could want instantly on every platform.
Wow. Okay. What's the time frame? You mentioned a Kickstarter there.
We're going through marketing and B2B alignment and user feedback for some polish. Right now, I would say 3 months.
Okay. Well, this is great. We cover a lot of from in-depth security stuff all the way to a 3D operating system. So this has been a lot of fun. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And enjoy NDC.